If you would please open your Bibles to Daniel chapter 10. Daniel chapter 10. This is God's word. In the third year of Cyrus, king of Persia, a revelation was given to Daniel, who was called Belshazzar. Its message was true, and it concerned a great war. The understanding of the message came to him in a vision. At that time, I, Daniel, mourned for 3 weeks. I ate no choice food, no meat or wine touched my lips, and I used no lotions at all until the 3 weeks were over. On the 24th day of the first month, as I was standing on the bank of the great river, the Tigris, I looked up, and there before me was a man dressed in linen with a belt of the finest gold around his waist. His body was like chrysolite, his face like lightning, his eyes like flaming torches, his arms and legs like the gleam of burnished bronze, and his voice like the sound of a multitude. I, Daniel, was the only one who saw the vision. The men with me did not see it, but such terror overwhelmed them that they fled and hid themselves. So I was left alone, gazing at this great vision. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale, and I was helpless. Then I heard him speaking, and as I listened to him, I fell into a deep sleep, my face to the ground. A hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said, "Daniel, you who are highly esteemed, consider carefully the words I am about to speak to you and stand up, for I have now been sent to you." And when he said this to me, I stood up trembling. Then he continued, "Do not be afraid, Daniel. Since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days. Then Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. Now I have come to explain to you what will happen to your people in the future, for the vision concerns a time yet to come." While he was saying this to me, I bowed with my face toward the ground and was speechless. Then one who looked like a man touched my lips, and I opened my mouth and began to speak. I said to the one standing before me, "I am overcome with anguish because of the vision, my Lord, and I am helpless. How can I, your servant, talk with you, my Lord? My strength is gone, and I can hardly breathe." Again, the one who looked like a man touched me and gave me strength. "Do not be afraid, O man highly esteemed," he said. "Peace. Be strong now. Be strong." When he spoke to me, I was strengthened and said, "Speak, my Lord, since you have given me strength." So he said, "Do you know why I have come to you? Soon I will return to fight against the prince of Persia, and when I go, the prince of Greece will come. But first, I will tell you what is written in the book of truth. No one supports me against them except Michael, your prince. And in the first year of Darius the Mede, I took my stand to support and protect him." May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. Well, this seems kind of strange, doesn't it? What in the world is going on? God sends an angelic messenger to speak to Daniel. Daniel has been seeking the Lord. He's not completely fasting, but he's doing a fast from certain things, not only in terms of food, but also in terms of his self-care. He's not getting all dressed up and putting on his lotions. Yes, men in ancient times sometimes used lotions to make themselves look better. My dermatologist tells me I ought to use sunscreen with a high SPF all the time. I just can't bring myself to do it because it makes me feel icky. But I'll probably be very sorry when they're having to cut all kinds of things off me someday. But Daniel was used to using lotions. It was part of, you know, his routine. And he stopped doing that. He stopped doing a lot of his normal, natural routine in order to focus his energy and his time, his attention, on seeking the Lord. That's what a fast is about. A lot of people think that fasting is just going without food. If you go without food and you don't spend that time seeking the Lord, that's a worthless fast. And so if you want to fast, food's not the only thing you can give up. Now, I'm not suggesting it's not good to fast from food. Daniel fasted from certain kinds of food, and you and I might do well to fast from certain kinds of food. And we might also do well to fast from certain other things that use up a lot of our time. For some people, that would be television. For some people, it would be texting. From some people, it might be playing some kind of game you love. But just saying that for a certain period of time, I'm going to do without that in order to focus the time and attention I usually give to that on the Lord. That's what fasting is all about. And that's what Daniel was doing. Well, in the midst of that, God sends a messenger to speak to Daniel, to minister to him, and let's see how that works out for him. Let's see. Verse 8 of chapter 10. I had no strength left. My face turned deathly pale, and I was helpless. Well, that doesn't sound very good. I don't want that to happen. If you saw Daniel having this experience, wouldn't you want to get him to the hospital right away? At least make him go lie down and say, man, you've been going without too much food. You need, you know, come on, we're going to help you here. He says he fell into a deep sleep with his face to the ground. Well, that's not good. He's on the bank of a river and he's got his face on the ground and he goes unconscious. We'd be flipping him over and, you know, wondering, should we do chest compressions? I mean, you know what? What is the matter with this guy? This is actually very good. Well, Pastor Wood, certainly you're not recommending that if we see somebody face down on the bank of the river and they're pale as can be and they can't gain consciousness that we're supposed to just leave them there. Well, no, I'm not really suggesting that. However, I want us to understand that we tend to think God draws near to us in the times when we are really doing well. We feel good, we look good, we've got our lotion on, we've been eating a nice, healthy diet, and we feel great. That's how I know I'm close to God. Well, that wasn't the case for Daniel. Sometimes when God draws near, it doesn't feel so good. Sometimes when God draws near, instead of feeling comforted and exhilarated, we can feel overwhelmed. We can feel wiped out. In the presence of God, Daniel didn't feel so good. You say, well, I thought this was an angel. Are you telling me this is God? I'm telling you, this is an angel of God. And just that much of God's presence through his messenger was terrifying to Daniel. It was overwhelming to him. And in order for him to receive the word of the Lord, God had to give him strength. In the New Testament, Jesus said to his disciples, I have much more to tell you, but right now, you couldn't bear it. You couldn't bear it. Yesterday, as I was driving back from Charlotte, I was thinking about a story that my dad told me just a couple of times when I was growing up about what he believes was an angel that spared his life when he was driving. He was a pastor in Illinois at the time, and he was driving through a rural area. He'd been with a family where the wife was dying. He went to the home to comfort the family and be with them as she passed away, and rather than dying at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon like a good Christian, Or at about 8 o'clock that night, like they thought surely she'd be gone by then, she continued to linger on. That happens sometimes, even when you want to go to heaven, even when you desire to be able to let go. Her body wouldn't let go. And so at midnight, they were still there, Dad trying to comfort the family, praying for her, praying with the family. 2 o'clock in the morning, she's still lingering on. Finally, sometime after 2, she went to be with the Lord. Again, Dad prayed with the family and then got in his car and headed back home. So Dad's driving down a long, long country road, dirt road as I recall, surrounded by cornfields on either side, southern Illinois, central Illinois. And I mean just really going fast because he's trying to get home before he falls asleep at the wheel. Not a good idea, but that's what he was doing. Hurrying, hurrying, pressing on, speeding. And he said, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he heard a voice that said, slow down! And it startled him so much he hit the brake. And when he hit the brake, there was another dirt road going this way. And a car went across there. Somebody else apparently who'd been up all night and was also speeding home. Dad said, if I hadn't hit the brake, I would have been killed and probably they would too. And he said, that's the only time I heard anything like that. And he said, and there was nobody there. He said, I didn't have the radio going. But he said it was just as clear as could be. And I thought as I was driving last night, how many times are there angels who would love to tell us something? Like, quit it, stupid. Why are you doing that? Why haven't you done this? But so many times, we're oblivious to what's going on around us. One of the illustrations my father used to use that delighted me. Dad did what he called object lessons. One of these days I ought to try and do this for you guys, but Dad would take a 1x4 piece of pine and he'd put it on the top of a table where kids could see it, and he'd take just a few sheets of newspaper and put over the end of the board that was on the table and leave another section of the board off the table to the side. So try and picture that in your mind. You've got a table, you've got a board that's partially on the table and partially off the table. The part on the table is covered with just a few sheets of newspaper, not a stack of newspapers, just a few sheets of newspaper. And he would press on the part that was off the table, showing that it raised the paper very easily when he just pressed down like this. And then he would take a hammer. And he'd say, now what do you suppose is going to happen if I hit the part that's off the table? And the kids would all say, the board's going to go like this. And he'd say, well, I don't know. Let's see. He'd push again. And looks like it's going to flip right up. Dad loved to do it right next to a large window. All the adults would be like, I hope Pastor knows what he's doing. Have you ever seen him do this before? Dad would talk a little bit about, you know, gauging, and kids would vote on what they thought was going to happen. And basically, the universal opinion of everybody watching was that the board's going to flip, maybe hit the window, break the glass. Dad would say, well, let's just see. And he'd say, I'm gonna hit it on 3, okay? 1, 2, 3. And when he hit the board, it would break just like that. I mean, just... Children, do not try this at home. You may not be as strong as my father. But I mean, the board would just break every time. And you know why? Because of the air pressure that is constantly on everything in the room all the time. It was sufficient with just a few sheets of newspaper to hold that board down, so that the force of Dad's blow broke the rest of the board sticking off the table. Mr. Wayne, you can try that sometime in science class. Do it outdoors. But Dad would explain that what's happening here is that something we are all in the midst of all the time that we can't see and that we don't notice because we're used to it is nevertheless very real and very strong. That made a real impression on me as a kid. Because it was one of many things that God did to teach me through my father that there's a whole lot of stuff going on that we can't see. Always remember, there is a lot going on that we can't see. Well, what does that have to do with Daniel chapter 10? Well, everything. In Daniel chapter 10, an angel comes to speak to Daniel, and he says, I started coming in answer to your prayer the first day you prayed. Look at it. Verse 12, do not be afraid, Daniel, since the first day that you set your mind to gain understanding and to humble yourself before your God, your words were heard. God heard your prayer back then when you first started seeking him. Your words were heard, and I have come in response to them. Daniel, here's the answer to your prayer. But the prince of the Persian kingdom resisted me 21 days, 3 weeks. 3 weeks of delay in the answer to Daniel's prayer. And then Michael, one of the chief princes, that is one of the angelic beings who has great power and authority, one of the chief princes came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. I don't understand what's going on. What are you talking about? What is this? Prince of Persia? King of Persia? If you look at Ephesians chapter 6, the Apostle Paul tells us that our warfare is not against flesh and blood, but against principalities and powers and the rulers of the darkness of this present age and against spiritual wickedness in high places. There is an invisible hierarchy of demonic beings that are always busily at work doing their thing. Did you know that demons work full-time? They really do. Did you know that they are organized and that the way they're described in Scripture, not only in the terminology used in Ephesians 6, but right here in Daniel chapter 10, indicates that they are geographically arranged? There's not only a hierarchy, but there are geographic orientations to these spiritual beings. Different ones of different rank who have responsibility for greater and greater areas, and not all demons and not all angels have the same amount of power. There are territorial spirits, and Paul's letter to the Corinthians tells us that those peoples of the world who worship idols, even though an idol in and of itself is nothing, are really worshiping demons. There are territorial spirits that are real. Oh, Pastor Wood, I'm starting to get a little nervous. You don't need to be nervous. You just need to be aware. You just need to understand that there really are demonic forces. I love the fact that lots of people, when they come and they visit the ranch, say, as soon as I drove onto the place, I sensed the presence of God. You're right. But God is everywhere, isn't he? Yes. But he shows up especially in certain places, and he has given his angels charge concerning us. We have angelic beings that minister on our behalf that are in this place, and I'll tell you something else. One of the reasons that God's presence is so clearly sensed here is because the demons that try and get in here are not welcome, and they're not in authority here. You understand? Sometimes spiders get in my home. They do. And when I see them, I say, oh, well, it's one of God's creatures. You know, I'm just going to leave it here because who knows? It might catch a mosquito. So I'm just going to let it kind of be part of the circle of life and the harmony of nature, and I'm just going to leave it alone. No, I squash them. I do.
Oh, Pastor, would you wouldn't kill a spider, would you?
Any chance I get.
Okay.
Well, shouldn't you capture it and take it outdoors and release it? No. They multiply. Okay? And they'll get so crowded outdoors, they'll look for the indoors. So I just kill them. There are plenty more. I don't think that in the history of the planet, people are going to say, and spiders used to roam the planet, but then a man in Tennessee began to kill them all. No, it's not an endangered species. Some highway project down in Texas has just been stopped because of one spider that they found. It's true. They found one spider that they thought no longer existed, as I understand the story. And it's like, oh, there is one of these spiders left. Well, stop the bulldozers. Okay. Hundreds of millions of dollars down the tube. We can't complete the highway. This is a habitat for a rare spider that we didn't know was still around. Bird brains. Say, well, we shouldn't really kill an endangered species, should we? It depends on what it's a species of. We're trying to eliminate polio. It's like, right? Not everything in creation is good. There's something called the fall. And if we can eliminate polio, I'm all for it. And even though we do need spiders out there in the ecosystem, we don't need them in our homes. Well, likewise, demons are not welcome here. Demons are not welcome at Ware's Valley Ranch. The devil is not welcome here. And let me tell you something. There are demons that have attached themselves to you your whole life. And when you come here, those demons find it very frustrating to be here. Because this is a place where they don't get to do their thing nearly as freely. And if they can't mess this place up, it makes it harder for them to mess you up. And so they will begin to work on you to try and get you out of here. And you need to know that. If they can't mess this place up, it's harder for them to mess you up. And so they will try to get you out of here. Because they don't want you to get free from their influence and start living wholeheartedly in devotion to Jesus Christ. You need to understand that. You have an enemy. He's real, he's intelligent, and he's got an army of forces that are evil and out to destroy you. You need to know that. And so the devil would like nothing better than to get you out of here so that you can go back to an environment where he's got a much freer hand. And there aren't nearly as many people praying for you, with you, encouraging you in your walk with God. Pastor, would you make it sound like if we're not at Ware's Valley Ranch, we can't walk with Jesus? I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is if God has brought you to this place, you need to be thanking Him and you need to do everything you can to get free from the forces that have been in your life and in your family's life many times for generations that are bent on getting you to do things you shouldn't, keeping you from doing the things you should, and ultimately encouraging your destruction and the destruction of others. You need to understand that. You need to be aware that there's an unseen realm, and just because you can't see it with your eyes doesn't mean it's not there. Did you know that right now, inside your body, there are white blood cells that are fighting against infection?
The infection? Do I have an infection?
I hope not. But you have germs that you get into your system all the time, and your immune system has to rise up and stop those things from spreading. Your body is continually, vigilantly seeking to overcome the hazards in the environment. Now, you don't need to walk around saying, man, can somebody check my blood? I want to be sure I've got enough white blood cells. No, you don't need to do that. But you need to thank God that He gave you an immune system, a part of which involves white blood cells.
How do you know these things, Pastor?
Well, just simple biology. If you haven't studied biology yet, you have something wonderful to look forward to. Because the more you learn about the creation, the more you will be amazed by the kindness and wisdom of God. Now, not only are there all kinds of things going on inside your body all the time that you're not conscious of. Some of us who are older, it's not just white blood cells working through our system right now, it's plaque building up in our arteries.
Well, that's a happy thought.
Well, it's just reality. Okay?
Can't I stop that?
Yes. There are things you can do to lower the risk of plaque buildup in your arteries. We can talk about it another time. But I want you to understand that whether you're conscious of what's going on or not, it happens. Plaque doesn't come and say, "Hi, we'd like to build up in your arteries. Is that okay with you? Can you give us the go-ahead on that?" It just happens. Stuff going on. There may be a part, you know, I apparently have had a problem with my heart from birth. Didn't know about it until I was in my 50s. Probably won't live long enough to die from it. But I'm going to die of something. You understand? Everybody in this room has got stuff that is part of your DNA that not, I mean, there's some stuff in your DNA that just obviously shows forth the glory of God. There's other stuff in your DNA because we live in a fallen world and we've inherited the results, both a sin nature and the curse. And there's stuff in your DNA that is like a ticking time bomb.
Pastor Red, you're making me uncomfortable.
Well, good. A little bit of that is good for you. If it keeps you alert and causes you to realize our days are numbered, let's live them for God, then that's a good thing.
You're saying I'm going to die of some kind of health problem?
No, you may not live long enough to die of a health problem. A tree may fall on you.
What is wrong with this man? He's so morbid. I don't like this.
I'm just trying to tell you that we live in a world that is fallen, and you and I have got to stop being totally preoccupied with stuff that is completely temporal and fix our eyes on that which is eternal. Because this world is not our home. This is not it.
You sound like you want everybody just to stay forever at the ranch.
I don't. Believe me, get a little older. I'll tell you. But I want you to understand that whether we're young or whether we're old, wherever God puts us, we're supposed to be focused on serving Him. And we need to realize that part of serving Him is understanding that there is an invisible realm that surrounds us that is filled with activity that we can't see with our eyes. Daniel, who was a prophet of God, who walked closely with God, did not understand that for 3 weeks, while he was seeking God, an angel was trying to get to him. How could a being like that have a hard time getting through because the prince of Persia was fighting against him? The prince of Persia, the ruler of that whole region, was resisting. And so another angel comes to help. Michael, one of the chief princes, verse 13, came to help me because I was detained there with the king of Persia. So we're talking about struggles between demons and angels? Yes.
You really think that kind of stuff goes on?
All the time. All the time. All the time. Just because we can't see it doesn't mean it's not real. There's a lot more going on than you can see. There's a lot more going on than you can see. And so in the midst of our daily life, our orientation needs to be on that which God has revealed to us, understanding that there's a lot God hasn't revealed to us. And sometimes when God reveals things to us, It doesn't make us feel better. If God told us what was about to happen, we wouldn't necessarily say, "Hoo-hoo." We might say, "Hoo-hoo." But in the midst of it, God says to us, "Do not be afraid. Take courage. Be strong. I'll strengthen you." And that's what the Lord did for Daniel. He gave him strength. He gave him courage. He gave him the capacity to hear and understand God's word. And what will follow in the concluding chapters of Daniel's book is a miraculous vision of future history. Both the short-term history of what was about to take place over the centuries that would follow, and long-term history pertaining to the end of the world. Now, let me just jump to the end of this book. I mean, there's an excellent reason, and that is I'm not going to speculate with some folks as to the detailed meaning of all these chapters. If you want to get a really interesting take on all this, listen to Chuck Missler. Okay? Who's Chuck Missler? He's a Bible teacher from Koinonia House, and he's got it all figured out. Okay? He's got it all figured out. I used to have it all figured out before I heard Chuck. No. years ago, I had it all figured out. I could draw you a chart of exactly how it's all going to play out. And it was a very impressive multicolored chart. It was derivative. I was using other people's work, people who for the last couple of hundred years have tried to diagram all this. And I had it all figured out, and I understood the whole thing. And when I was in seventh grade, I said to Mr. Alexander, my science teacher, trying to show off what a dork I was, I said, "Mr. Alexander, can I ask you a question? Are you a premillennialist, a postmillennialist, or an amillennialist?" Mr. Alexander, who I'm not sure knew what those words meant, gave me what was actually a reasonable answer. "Why, that's as personal as my toothbrush. I'm not going to share it with you." Let me tell you something. We don't have to understand all the details of how it's all going to go down. What we need to understand is that God has it perfectly mapped out. It's totally, totally planned by God, and it's going to work out exactly the way God said. And as it does, all of us are going to look at the developments in human history and say, "Wow, that's exactly what he said. That is exactly what God said would happen." So how does it end up? Verse 13 of chapter 12. "As for you, go your way till the end. You will rest, and then at the end of the days, you will rise to receive your allotted inheritance." What does he say? Daniel, go your way until the end. You're going to die. You're going to rest. And then God's going to raise you up, and you'll receive the inheritance that he has planned for you. That much, knowing that, is enough to give us courage and comfort, regardless of current events or future events, because we know that God has promised that he will preserve and protect and reward those who are his.